Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Ben Harrison. Ben, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
I'm excited. Ooh. Now, you, some people who listen to this show may be familiar with you, but just in case, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I'm my real job is that I am a video director, and I do that for a men's lifestyle website. But one of my side hobbies is that I am also a Star Trek podcaster.
What?
Yeah, I started a Star Trek podcast with my friend Adam Pranica about 6 months ago, and something like that. Funny story, a past guest of yours, John Roderick, introduced Adam and me, and we got along and then realized that we were both big fans of making jokes about Worf and Riker and all the whole gang. So we decided to record our jokes and spread them into the internet like a pestilence.
Yes, and this is news to me that there are other podcasts about Star Trek. I thought I had cornered the market, but sadly not.
We get the occasional comment like, oh man, like I wish I'd thought of that. And I'm like, oh, we didn't.
You still can.
Yeah.
Yes, the Star Trek is well serviced by the podcast industry.
Yeah.
And many, many different kinds of, and so your podcast in particular, The Greatest Generation, I don't know if we said that or not.
Oh, yeah.
Check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes for folks to listen to it. Very entertaining. But unlike my podcast, because it's really about me, you have co-hosts, right? And it's always the same person, which means that you can develop some kind of in-jokes and things that can continue throughout your podcast reign.
That's sort of we made that choice just because I think it sort of seemed to be successful in – like what we were doing when we first started seemed to get to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
But I often rue that decision because there are lots of people like you and like John and lots of friends of ours that I know love to talk about Star Trek and pick it apart. And I wish we had some mechanism by which there were guests on the show, but we've never done it. And so far the consensus is like, you know, if what's working, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yes, very. And I sometimes think, especially when I'm listening to podcasts like yours, I think, gee, it would be nice if I had if I watched these in order, and B, if I had a regular person who was on my podcast that we could talk about. Because you go, you know, you have that rich kind of back catalog. You can make callbacks. You can do all kinds of fun stuff.
We have fun with that. But I like your show too. I've been a listener for a long time, and I don't think that there's a right or wrong way to do it. And I think it's great that there's a rich tapestry of Star Trek podcasts out there.
Tapestry, a much better episode than the one we're going to talk about. So my big question for you, though, you guys talk about The Next Generation. Clearly, I ask everybody if they're Star Trek fans. Clearly, you're a Star Trek fan. But big what fan. Happens when you hit the end of The Next Generation? There are only 7 seasons. Then what happens to your podcast?
So there are kind of 2 schools of thought on this, and no real clarity yet. But there's one school of thought that it is like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, where we get to the end and we go back to the beginning and start over.
Oh,
and just keep doing it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the other concept is either we start to blend in Deep Space Nine when those episodes are, you know, like essentially do it in order of airing. So that we start to have Deep Space Nine and eventually even maybe Voyager in there, or, you know, maybe we just finish TNG, then start DS9, then start Voyager. You know, it's unclear what we'll wind up doing, but one of those 2 general plans is probably it.
Excellent. Now, I noticed you did not mention Enterprise.
So I think that probably doesn't get brought up in conversation, mainly because I think Adam and I weren't watching Enterprise when it was in its initial run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so. It's harder to. I think we make a lot of very disparaging jokes about Star Trek: The Next Generation, but people like our show because it's clear that at the end of the day, we love Star Trek: The Next Generation,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot that I like about Enterprise. But I think it would be hard to make a podcast under the cover of. Clearly, they love the show, but they just, you know, give it a good ribbon on every episode.
And I bring Enterprise up because we were randomly selected an Enterprise episode and an episode that brings to light the critical weakness in my program's very conceit, which is that we watch random episodes, because this episode called The Forgotten is a late season 3 episode, season 3, episode 20, for people keeping track at home.
Yeah.
And it is deep, deep, deep into the Zindi War arc that I only vaguely remember.
Yeah, this is like a 12 or 15 episode arc, if memory serves.
Yes, and it makes it difficult to talk about because
there are a lot of threads that I couldn't remember what was going on.
Yes,
and I did watch season 3 of Enterprise. I don't think I finished season 4. I've heard that there's some excitement at the end for a TNG fan, and somehow I just never got around to it.
You should watch the last episode of Enterprise.
All right.
I'm just saying, there's some people you might recognize that show up and really kind of undercut the whole ending of Enterprise. But whatever, that's what they do.
Sounds pretty on brand.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of like, I know what you were going for, but it kind of cheapened the whole thing.
Yeah. Let's just say it seems like it'll be a long way getting from here to there.
But you have to have faith of the heart. Oh, that song. Oh, that song. It's so sad. But before we jump into Enterprise, I want to ask you one question, which I don't think the answer will be Enterprise. But I don't know if the answer will be The Next Generation either. What is your favorite series, Star Trek series?
I'll give you my ranking.
Oh, please do.
First and best is Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. I like how definitively you said that.
Second best, Voyager.
Oh.
Third best, Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth best, Enterprise.
Oh, boy.
Fifth best, original series. Come at me.
This is a controversial ranking on many levels. I believe that no one, the first choice, not controversial. Some people may quibble, but I feel
a lot
like
of people think it's DS9, but they're wrong.
I am one of those people who is wrong. I think that DS9 is, of course, the best Star Trek. Although I have... When I close my eyes and think about Star Trek, which happens a lot, the Enterprise D and Captain Picard is kind of my home Star Trek.
That's your knee-jerk Star Trek.
Exactly. If I'm feeling sad and a little alone and I want to watch a little pick-me-up Star Trek, I will turn to The Next Generation.
Dig it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't dislike Deep Space Nine. I think that my main thing is that I don't like Deus Ex Machinas, and I don't like godlike aliens, and I really hate the Q storyline in TNG, and it's like they took all the fun and games out of the Q storyline and made that the prophets storyline,
or the wormhole aliens.
At least John DeLancey is a delight to watch. You know,
the wormhole aliens not very delightful to watch.
Yeah, they have zero charisma.
Although it is fun that they manifest themselves as characters we already know, and they have that wacky filter on the camera whenever they appear.
Yeah,
and they
fun
talk
and very inexpensive.
Yes, you know, you've got to keep these costs down, people. We pay for these sets; we're going to use them.
Yeah,
I will. I can understand that. I've said this before. My least favorite part of Deep Space Nine is all things Bajoran. Which includes the prophets. I do like that Captain Sisko is torn between being a Federation officer and basically being a religious figure. So that makes it interesting. But I can totally see that. But the controversy comes with two picks, and I think you know this already, but we're not going to skip over them. Your number two slot before DS9 is Voyager.
Yes.
And your number five slot is the original series.
Yeah.
You rank Enterprise before the original series, which I think might be sacrilege. I don't know. Need to check the books.
Yeah. I don't know. It's probably mainly an artifact of the fact that I was born in the 80s. And so TOS just feels impossibly dated. And I never saw it in syndication. Mm-hmm. Like the first time, like I love the characters because I loved the films, the
movies?
But mm-hmm. I didn't have any interaction with the TOS as a child and had to watch it, you know, as like an adult when it came out on Netflix. And I was not impressed.
Well, I was just talking.
I'm glad it exists because it gave us everything else, but
yeah, it's tough. I was talking the episode that airs before this, last week's episode, Michael Lopp and I were talking about this very thing because in my mind, I've seen all the original series episodes so many times that when I think about them, I just skip to the exciting or interesting aspects of them. And then when I watch them, because I've seen them so many times, but now when I watch them, they're 50 minutes long and they are 50 years old.
Yeah.
Pacing, very different for a 50-year-old TV show than it is now. They take their sweet time getting places, literally and figuratively. So I can understand that. Although the movies, man, those movies, some of them, very good.
Yeah.
Some of them, not so good.
But so
Voyager.
Good.
Let's not skip over Voyager, though. Number two slot with Voyager.
Yes.
I think...
I like Voyager a lot. And I think that partly that's just on the strength of Janeway as a captain. Mm-hmm. I think she's a really terrific captain. And probably gives Picard a run for his money as best captain. And I like that it kind of reverses the trend that Deep Space Nine started of super duper long story arcs. I like that a lot of Voyager are bottle episodes and that, you know, it's kind of getting back to its roots of a show that, you know, like there's definitely some more story arcs in Voyager than TNG, but they do like show up at a planet, have an adventure and then leave. And it's like, we don't have to worry about that ever again.
It's true. Let's never speak of this again. All right.
And I like that. I like that. You know, it's TNG. There's no kind of overarching sense of doom the way Voyager has it. But I think that Voyager kind of maintains that spirit of a crew that's really committed to working together, despite the fact that half of them are, you know, previously the enemies
criminals
of the Federation. And and I think, you know, I think Star Trek at its best is a very hopeful universe, and Deep Space Nine is maybe just too pessimistic for me. I think Voyager is about a group of people like bonding with each other and, you know, rolling up their sleeves and getting to work on a very hard problem, and I really like that about it.
And I'm not surprised because I feel like a lot of times when I'm watching Voyager, I think this could pretty much be a TNG episode.
Sure.
It's kind of the spiritual successor to TNG, whereas Deep Space Nine, they were trying to do some different things, so it's a very different show.
Deep Space Nine is the spiritual successor of Babylon 5.
That is true. and they're trying to complicate things, and I think successfully, but I could totally see, as someone who loves TNG, that Voyager would be quite appealing. And to be clear, I like Voyager as well. It's just I wouldn't put it as number two, certainly not above DS9. But we agree to disagree.
Yeah, fair enough.
Nobody can be wrong in ranking their things they like. That's what I have. Everybody should keep in mind.
Yeah.
But so that now we should talk about. Now let's pivot back to Enterprise, because we watched an episode of Enterprise, and damn it, we're going to talk about it because we watched it. And so I must admit that a lot of things happened in this episode, and refer to many things in other episodes that I have no recollection of at all.
It starts with like one of the, you know, last time on Star Trek Enterprise, you know, roundups of important moments from previous episodes. And I felt like that was maybe the most meaningless thing in the entire episode.
Yes, it's kind of, it reminded me of when you watch Mad Men, and they would be like, next on Mad Men, and right. they would show you the little 30 seconds for the scenes of next on Mad Men, but they would like show them completely random scenes that had nothing to do, and you would be like, now I know less than I knew before about what's going to be next on Mad Men because of that.
This is, it's like... I felt like Dr. Pulaski was messing with my brain. It was like making me remember less of what I already only vaguely remembered of the Zindi War.
Yes. So the Zindi War is a thing. The thing you need to remember, the Zindi are a species that have like 18 different kinds of subspecies.
There's like the humanoids, the mammalians, the aquatics, the reptilians.
Reptilians, ooh.
The insecties.
Yeah, I think that's what they call them, the insecties.
Because they're so insecty.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose, but it gets the point across.
Yeah, and some of them are actors in makeup, and others are like CG
old
characters.
That perhaps doesn't hold up as well. But, you know, it's fine. So they don't like Earth because somebody, they have a shadowy figure that's telling them that they should destroy Earth because Earth is out to get them. So they built this weapon that was kind of a test. They killed a bunch of people in Florida, one of which was Tripp's sister. It's important. Right. And now they are trying to build their final phase Death Star weapon that will blow up Earth.
I think that the basic storyline is that it's sort of like a proxy war, like in a larger time war.
Yes.
And so the present day nascent Federation is trying to stop the Zindi from doing like a planet killer Death Star type of deal on them. And the Zindi are, having their strings pulled by some shadowy future aliens.
Future people who want to destroy the Federation because they are beaten. The Sphere Builders, I think is what they're called, or Sphere Makers, something like that. They are beaten by the Zindi and the Federation because the Zindi joined the Federation. And so they don't want them to join the Federation. So they figure, let's trick them into blowing up Earth and that should solve our problem. And apparently, and this I have no recollection of this, but some reptilian Zindi travel back in time because they think the best way to destroy Earth is with a biological weapon. So they travel back in time to build that biological weapon on past Earth. And then I guess they're going to kill everybody. But Archer and crew somehow travel back in time and stop them and then travel back in time with some evidence, but not a whole lot of evidence, really.
Right.
Which is also critical to this episode. And they are going to try and appeal to the Zindi and, you know, blow the cover off of what's happening, that they're being manipulated and
so
all
there's
that stuff.
Like, there's like four storylines in this episode. There's the, like, Archer trying to convince a couple of, you know, potentially turnable Zindi this evidence. There is the ship is super chewed up and barely being held together.
Mm-hmm.
There is Tripp needs to take a nap and write a letter.
Yes.
And then there's T'Pol is recovering from some kind of pill addiction.
Yeah, she's a druggie now. A recovering druggie, though.
There's so many things happening in this episode, and yet, like, almost nothing happens.
Nothing happens. Tripp does eventually write his letter, FYI.
He does take his little nap.
He reluctantly takes his nap and has a bad dream.
A bad dream.
So, I guess he was right. Screw sleep. That's what we learned from this episode.
Yeah.
Because someone on Tripp's team dies. 18 people have died, and so one of them worked for Tripp, although, you know, he's a couple of layers of management above her. And Captain Archer, being the usual dour Captain Archer that he is like, hey, Tripp, write a letter to her parents. And Tripp is like, I'm holding this ship together. I can't have time to write no stinking letter. And Archer's like, well, write a letter. And he's like, okay, I'll have one of my people write it for me. And Archer says, no, I really want you to write the letter. They spend a lot of time on this letter. And so Tripp's like, fine, I'll write the goddamn letter. He's having trouble writing the letter. And at the end of it, he realizes he was having trouble writing it because he was thinking about a sister and that was clouding his emotions. And so he couldn't really write about the person who died. And so he wrote the letter. Frankly, the letter, there's a lot of buildup to this letter. The letter's not all that great.
Yeah, it's sort of, you know, like if there was a big buildup to a song and dance number at the end of a movie and then they kind of kind of half-assed it, phoned it in.
Yep, that's this letter. If I were the grieving parents of this crew person, I'd be like, really?
Oh, cool. Did you like copy that off the internet, Trip? Thanks.
That's right. This is like the Word template for letter of condolence. You just pasted in my daughter's name.
Yeah.
Basically, his letter is, I'm sorry, she died doing what she loved. Right. Hugs and kisses, Trip.
Yeah.
And you're like, that really? It took you that long to write that letter? Oh, Trip. Yeah. But he does take a nap. He's prescribed a nap by Dr. Phlox.
Right.
This episode could have used some more Dr. Phlox, I think.
Yeah, I like Dr. Phlox. I think he's a good character.
He's my favorite Enterprise character after Porthos. It's Porthos, Dr. Phlox.
Well, Porthos is just so pettable.
He's very pettable. Dr. Phlox also pettable.
They both have big, long tongues.
That is true. I had forgotten that Dr. Phlox had a big, long tongue.
Yeah.
So I don't remember. Maybe I skipped this whole thing with T'Pol getting hooked on feeling pills.
But
Trillium, I guess, is a thing. And she was taking it for 3 months to feel stuff, I guess. It's unclear why she's taking it.
Yeah, it's to feel something. Anything.
That's right. To fill this dead void that's inside of me.
Yeah. It's a very interesting idea, I think, to have a Vulcan be stuck around no other Vulcans and be awash in emotion and need to like ask the advice of species that don't suppress their emotions for what to do. You know, given what we know about how secretive the Vulcans are about their kind of their sexuality and their sort of quasi religion that they practice, it's kind of nuts that she's stuck dealing with this in a ship full of, you know, super impassioned humans and then Dr. Phlox also.
it is true. And in the first season, I think they spent a lot of time talking about how T'Pol is struggling to adapt to being around humans. And I think that there are some episodes where other Vulcans come up and they're like, how to even deal with the smell, which is interesting.
Makes you wonder what Vulcans smell like to us.
It's true. I'm going to guess they smell like cinnamon and sand.
Hmm.
That's my guess.
That doesn't sound terrible.
No, I think it's pleasant.
I can see that being like a Yankee Candle type of deal.
That's right. Vulcan. That's delicious. That's just my guess, though. I really like cinnamon, so I am biased. But I like Vulcans as well. Cinnamon is, I think, the most logical of spices.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Just don't try and do like a tablespoon of it all at once.
Oh, no. But if you film it, you will be an internet celebrity. So give that a try, people.
One other thing that T'Pol in this episode made me realize is that I don't think I'd ever quite put this into a trope in my head, but this show, this series really has a way of finding a way for a sexually attractive female character to be wearing something way skinnier than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody's basically got like a Carhartt work jumpsuit on that you would like creep under a Buick and wrench on it in. And she's in like a cat suit. I guess that's just her Vulcan science uniform.
That's the way Vulcans do science.
Yeah.
It's very
sexiest
logical.
Sexiest science.
That's right. Science is sexy. I will say there are a lot of things about Enterprise I don't like. Namely, most of the characters. The things I do like, I think the production values are fantastic. And I feel like the uniforms make the most sense of any Star Trek uniforms, barring T'Pol's uniform. They're boring, but they seem like to be what people would actually wear if it were to happen.
Yeah, it's sort of a midpoint between a like what an astronaut would wear and what a military person would wear.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And it is interesting in my mind. So they obviously it's a prequel, right? So somehow they get from what the people are wearing on Enterprise to what the people wear in the original series. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure how that works, but
Hey guys, let's just wear sweatshirts now.
Okay, fashion. You can't. There's no accounting for fashion.
No.
So we've covered Trip writing his letter and taking his nap. I think he has two bad dreams in this episode, doesn't he?
Or yeah, you might be right.
I think he dreams of the dead ensign or whoever. I think he has a dream about T'Pol, maybe. I don't remember. I could be wrong about that.
Who knows? Who knows? Possible it's, to tell.
So much is happening. Yeah. And so, yeah, she's addicted to Trillium. She's kicked it, and she says, "Dr. Phlox, you got to help me. I'm feeling emotions." And he's like, "Well, you did it to yourself. yeah. We may not be able to fix your neural pathways thanks to all that sweet, sweet Trillium that you took. So you might have to just try to adjust to it."
Yeah.
And he does not seem to offer much advice.
I mean, but he's got like a little bit of bedside manner, so you got to imagine that that's like somewhat comforting.
I guess. I don't know. She doesn't seem all that comforted. And she does say that all of her exercises that she uses to, because Vulcans, there's a misconception, probably not among people who listen to Star Trek podcasts, but amongst the general population, that Vulcans don't have emotions. If people think about Vulcans at all, which they probably don't, but Vulcans do have emotions. They're just like Roman Catholics. They suppress the emotions until they are just logical. And I can say that. I was raised Roman Catholic. So what I'm saying is I'm a Vulcan.
Sure.
But I'm addicted to Trillium.
I was raised Episcopalian, which I think Robin Williams said, same religion, half the guilt.
Oh, there you go. See?
Catholicism light.
Yes. I got all the guilt, so it was great. And Irish Catholic, too. So even then, the Irish people want to suppress their emotions. Then you add Catholicism, it's like we got nothing. Yeah. Except one day, you drink heavily. That's what we do. So maybe if T'Pol had come to me, I would just say, have you thought of taking up drinking?
Have you ever tasted this thing called whiskey?
It will solve all of your problems and also make them all much worse. And then,
but you won't care because whiskey.
Exactly. And so T'Pol's dealing with her emotions, although that really doesn't come up at all other than that she's having them.
I get the feeling that this was a more major storyline in previous episodes and will maybe continue to be a storyline for a few more, but this is just kind of like T'Pol in a holding pattern.
Yep. This is basically to remind us, hey, remember, T'Pol is feeling more emotions now, so we can build up to it. But the big excitement is the Zindi negotiations. They have to go talk to, what is that guy's name? Degra.
Yeah.
Who is a Zindi.
Right. And I think maybe Degra was like kind of the bad guy for a while, but is now sort of considering the possibility that he's been deceived the entire time and that maybe the Zindi should not be in the business of a xenocide.
Yes, he was totally, I think he designed the weapon. And because I remember Proving Ground, which is an episode we covered, he was in that. So when I saw him, I was like, oh, that guy. That was my exact reaction. Oh, that guy. And so he is feeling like, well, you know, I want to fight for my own race and make sure that we exist. But maybe we should think about this and see if Archer's evidence that he claims to have is true. Because Archer, I think, had many opportunities to kill Degra. And he didn't, although apparently he wiped Degra's memory at some point. I don't think I saw that episode, so they had some adventure, and Archer somehow wiped his memory.
Yeah. That was very confusing for me, because I didn't know the thing about the wiping the memory till very late in the episode, so I was like,
what the hell is going on?
What does this guy know and not know? It doesn't make any sense.
He knows many things, but only remembers some. I guess. I don't know. So they meet at a secret location that is full of spatial anomalies, apparently, and cloaking devices and all kinds of weirdness. And the Zindi ship shows up. It's a tiny little ship. And they go to a big sphere because the sphere builders make spheres. And they chill out there for a little bit. And Archer shows his evidence to Degra and his companion, whose name I don't know.
Big hairy guy,
yes. Who looks kind of cool.
Yeah, really cool makeup on the, I guess that's the mammalians, maybe?
Yes. And he is not a big fan of this whole idea, and he keeps poking holes in all the evidence that Archer's giving.
It's got a lot more you know, he's a lot more incredulous than Degra. I mean,
yeah.
Degra's definitely on a footing of, I'll hear you out and make my own decision, but his buddy is more resistant to that.
Yes, his buddy is like, none of this is really adding up to what he's saying. Because Archer's story is a bit incredible. we happen to know it's true, but he basically says we travel back in time, saw all this stuff, and here's some evidence of things that we saw. And so the one who doesn't believe him makes a very reasonable request. He's like, well, maybe if you show us how you traveled in time, the council will believe you. And right. That seems reasonable. And Archer's like, I can't do that. And you're like, it's hard. And I don't know how they traveled back in time because I don't remember how that happened. But there must be. They got some help from somebody, apparently.
Yeah.
Some time traveler who wants to change history. Who knows? But anyway, that's one of the plots is they have to figure out. They have to convince Degra. They convince him because there are some chromatic particles or something on some things that they have. And so he's like, I'm completely convinced. And once he's convinced, oh no, the reptilians in the show up.
Yeah,
they're the bad guys.
Yeah, I guess the Zindi have some kind of ad hoc government that decides how much genocide they're going to commit.
That's right. That's the council.
The reptilians are the hawks in this council.
Yes, nothing pleases them more than killing other species entirely, and they want to do it like post haste. Like, come on, let's kill these humans right now.
Right.
And so Degra is like, no, we shouldn't kill these humans. And the reptilians, like, we totally should. And the reptilians have a big ship. Degra has a tiny little ship.
Yeah, and the Enterprise is real is beat
all,
up.
So. All beat up. And so basically Archer's like, if we have any fighting chance, you need to help us, Degra. And Degra's like, you're asking me to fight my own species. And Archer's like, yes. And Degra's like, okay. And so... They do. They disable the reptilian ship, and everybody's happy. Archer's like, great, let's. We did what we need to do. Degra blows up the ship, though, because he says if I didn't, they would tell the council, and everyone would know our business. And that was very exciting, and people were sad.
Yeah.
And then, we skipped over the other very exciting thing. So the Enterprise is falling apart.
The plasma thing, right?
There's a plasma. Yes, a warp coolant plasma thing.
Yeah. So they kind of took two things from TNG, different TNG storylines, and just made their own new storyline out of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one where there's like some biological material on the back of the Enterprise that they got off of that Klingon ship that Riker is doing his...
His cultural exchange.
Yeah, his cultural exchange on. It's like eating away at the ship. There's a little chink in the Enterprise's armor that's getting bigger and bigger, but they don't know about it. You know, it's just like the camera will cut to the exterior of the ship periodically and show problem. Yeah. And then the other thing that they stole is the scene in Star Trek First Contact where they have to go fight Borgs on the surface of the ship and then, you know, turn turn levers and press buttons while it's all happening. So Trip and I guess, what's the other guy's name?
Malcolm.
Trip and Malcolm have to go out and spacesuit around on the outside of the ship to fix the plasma fire.
Yes, and it seems like, for some reason, you can only do this outside the ship.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of problems. Like, Malcolm shows to... They have to open some hatches and turn some levers.
As you do.
And Malcolm is getting overheated because he's so close to the plasma fire and he's having trouble, but he chooses to be on the side of the hatch that is closest to the fire. And then when he gets the hatch off, he has this big piece of metal and he just like flings it off into space rather than just turning around. Like it's in like there's no gravity. So it's not going anywhere. He could have just set it up as a little heat shield for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you wasn't thinking straight.
They might want that panel later too, to put back. But I thought that was funny. He just kind of flings it. Yeah. And I thought, maybe you shouldn't fling things. Anyway, there's another ship. Maybe it would hit it. I don't know. Malcolm doesn't care.
I couldn't remember. Do they not have transporters yet in this?
They have transporters, but they don't trust them because they don't work entirely right.
Oh, okay. Because I kept wondering why they didn't beam him directly to sickbay, which is what I would want to do if I had just been... you know, cooked in my spacesuit.
Yeah, you would think that would be a good idea. But yeah, they don't. And I think that one could also say the Enterprise is so beat up, maybe the transporters are offline. But they don't work very well, so they don't use them a lot. Because they could have ended up mutilating him in the transporter. So they decided, let's just bring him in the normal way.
Yeah.
He's sure. just hot. He needs a beverage, is what it turns out.
Yeah.
And he has to get cooled down. And I think, I mean, not a lot. And like you said, this episode, there's 44 minutes of stuff that happens. Yeah. And there's a whole lot of, you know, information that gets dumped into our heads.
Yeah.
But not a lot actually happens.
I think that the only thing that has changed about the situation at the end is that Degra is more committed to hearing them out.
Yes.
He's definitely not their ally yet, you know?
No, he's like, you pretty much convinced me.
Yeah, I had to kill hundreds of my allies, but I'm still not...
The outcome is that, yes, I will take you to a council meeting.
Yeah.
Which is not a very dramatic outcome for having blown up a ship and having things blow up.
There are easier ways to get a date.
Yes, there are many. There are some good moments in this. Like, Degra comes on board, and everybody's showing Degra stuff. He's like, oh, I can help with the coolant leak or whatever. And there's lots of interesting... Trip is the only person who doesn't really like Degra. And he doesn't like Degra because his sister got killed because of Degra. So there's some good tension between the two. And T'Pol at one point pulls Trip aside and is like, hey, man... Chill out.
Yeah, you need to knock it off with yelling at this guy every time you see him.
That's right. It's getting old, and we need him to not blow up the planet. So get with the program, man. So that was interesting. There was a little conflict there. But
because Trip is holding Degra personally responsible for his sister's death. Not incorrectly.
No, pretty much it's his fault.
The show ends on a shot of a picture of Trip's sister in a picture frame, and it just looks like when you buy a picture frame and there's like a fake picture already in it.
Yes,
I don't know what Trip. I can't imagine missing a stock photo as much as he does.
He and I also thought that that last shot really undercuts, because the last scene is Trip dictating this letter. Yeah. About his ensign, right? And so you think, oh, it's a heartfelt letter. Not, you don't really think that because it's a template letter. But you're supposed to think that.
It's a template picture.
Yes, and then it's a template picture. And then you think, OMG, he's writing a letter to his sister, not to the ensign anyway. So that kind of makes it creepy and cheapens the letter.
Yeah.
You're like, very man, Trip. Archer asked you to do one thing. You couldn't even do that.
Looking for catharsis in all the wrong places.
That's right. We don't have time for that. Walk it off, Trip. Take a nap. 4 hours. and the other thing, and I did like Degra also. There was a moment that they don't spend much time on, but he says, you know, after Trip has confronted him, I think he says to Archer maybe, you know, I knew what we were building and the weapon was going to kill people, but I never thought I'd actually have to live with the ramifications of this.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting because, you know, kind of painting him in a different light, and he's doing what he thinks is right. But he doesn't really think about the consequences of people's families live on this planet. They're not all enemies.
Yeah. I think that that's just sort of what war asks of people, though. You know, we've decided as a society that this is the only way to save ourselves. And, you know, there are lots of innocents that are going to perish in any kind of decision like that. So.
That's true, especially when you want to blow up a planet.
Yeah.
Not everybody on a planet can be bad.
Yeah.
Most people, maybe. But a few good people, I'm sure, are on there.
I've met one or two on this planet.
maybe one.
Yeah.
And it's not Trip's sister.
Yeah.
She knows what she did.
She can go.
That's right. She already did, so. But you can find her picture at your local pharmacy. Yeah. Overall, this episode, I feel like, is hard to judge because it feels like we've watched the middle of something. Right. But it totally was not, there was no to be continued. So it was displayed as kind of a standalone episode that you could watch.
Yeah.
So do you think it is a successful episode of Star Trek, or what?
I think that it is not very Star Trek-y. You know, it doesn't really explore any big ideas, or maybe it starts to, but is ultimately doesn't have the stamina to. And I think that 4 plot lines is just too many. You know, I think that I don't think that that's a big challenge for the best writer's room on television. And I don't think this was that, you know.
No, sadly, it was not. I mean, there are lots of interesting things. I think that, you know, the idea, there's just so much packed into this, right? There's the idea that the sphere builders are extra dimensional beings who are trying to turn the expanse into their dimension so they can chill and hang out. Right. And that's what they've started this whole war so that they can not be thwarted. So that's a really interesting idea. But having it all muddled together, this episode doesn't work for me. And there's not enough Porthos.
Yeah, it feels like filler.
Yes. And I feel like nowadays, well, certainly back then, way back in the year 2004, seasons of shows were longer, right? So they needed, 24? Yes, so they had 24 episodes in a season, which is a lot of episodes. So they needed to fill some time. And this is the 20th episode, so this is really super late in the season. So they're just building up to their final 2 episodes, probably.
I think they're probably thinking like, okay, we got to have at least the last 1 or 2 not be total turkeys so that we can get one more miserable season of this show.
That's right. We got paychecks, so we got families that we could feed. So let's try and, you know,
let's just leave this here and see if nobody notices.
Maybe it will be forgotten. See what I did there? I did not understand the title either. So who are the Forgotten?
Oh, I guess because they're having sort of a memorial service.
Oh, I guess, yes, those 18 the beginning, people. They don't want to be forgotten.
Man. Kirk, I guess, comes a little later in the timeline, but Archer should have taken a page out of Kirk's funeral service playbook.
Yes, he Kirk's much more emotional. Archer's kind of like, I gathered you all in this rec room, so a lot of people are dead. We're not. Go team.
Rah-rah.
And thank you, Ben, for joining me and talking about this forgettable episode of Enterprise.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, and I hope that I didn't bring down your average on the entertainment value of your show.
Not at all.
I really enjoy it, and it's a thrill to have been invited on.